This is Due By Friday, the weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, watch the documentary Six by Sondheim.
Hello.
Hello. My iPad isn't turning on.
Oh, did you install the beta?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Mel was kind enough to let me borrow her iPad, and by kind enough, I mean I begged for about a half hour and traded my AirPods for an iPad, and I gotta say, pretty good beta, other than the fact that it only connects to Wi-Fi about 50% of the time, but...
I'm having a rough time with it.
Oh, really?
Having a rough time with it. I have an error where the dock doesn't work after about an hour of use, like it just stops working. Have you guys experienced that?
Are you on the public beta? I also
I'm on the developer beta. So... I don't know. You know what it reminds me of? It's like I've had over the last couple months, I've had this like this horrible back injury that keeps coming back, and it's like it's one of those things of like you sort of take for granted when your back doesn't hurt all the things that you can do.
That is a big one. You do not appreciate how well that has worked up until now.
Yeah, it's like I don't know. I don't ever think when I go down the stairs how great it is to just go bounding down the stairs. But it's like now that I have this like terrible back injury, it's like every fucking thing is just like I have to move so gingerly because like I'm always scared of doing the thing that's going to hurt my back.
And then you start overcompensating. Like if I sleep weird, like I sleep too deeply on a weird twist. And then I wake up the next day. Now the whole rest of the day, I'm overcompensating, and now other muscles hurt because I'm trying to accommodate the hurt ass muscle.
Story of my life. Anyway, this is what using the beta feels like to me. It's like
you're gonna love being 50. Oh,
I'm constantly so like I'm so scared of like breaking. It feels like a fragile like a bird or something.
Is this the show? Because I will talk about this if you want to talk about this.
Yeah, this is the show. I tweeted about my terrible RSI fear because, you know, Twitter is the place where I get my medical advice.
Yeah.
And I indeed went to see a doctor and they're like, well, it's not so much like a repetitive strain injury, but it seems like there's been a lot of pressure on both of your wrists constantly. Do you have nightmares at all?
What?
Like, oh, well, so it turns out I'm just like clenching my wrists in my
sleep. Turns out.
Like TMJ and clutch. They're like, and the doctor said, I have a feeling that you are clutching your pillow so tightly and you're sleeping on your wrists.
How do I get a doctor like this? This is why I stopped going to the doctor. You get like, well, it's a whole bunch of things. Just do everything better. Thanks, buddy. I want somebody who goes like, well, I'm pretty sure that you have a very specific kind of anxiety that causes you to clench your jaw on this one side while it's too loose on the other side. I don't have any evidence in that. That's the vibe that you throw.
I mean, she was right.
Yeah, of course.
I had my back was hurting me like a couple weeks ago. It was hurting so bad. I was in this meeting with the writers and I was lying on the floor because it was like the only position I could be in where my back was not hurting me.
Is that Milch? Is it Milch that does that?
What?
Isn't the guy who does Deadwood? He takes lots of drugs.
Oh, well, I think he's taking a lot of poppers and he gets dizzy and he's still like, I think he's one of these characters. Like, I don't know what gives me this image, but he's like, you know, before I like to write David Milch, he's like, I like to have a little sip of alcohol. Yeah. Cut to him pouring an enormous egg cup, brimming with like straight room temperature vodka.
Price is Right's going to be on in a few. Might as well have a morning cap.
I don't want to give me that image. Anyway, so I'm lying on the floor and Joe Feldman, Joe's our head writer. I'm sure she'll make an appearance on Due By Friday at some point for something or another. But, Joe's into, she's into all this like kooky medicine stuff. Like she's always doing that like whole 30 cleanse purge thing. And I don't know. She does like, any kooky health stuff. Joe is knows all about it. And Joe's like, you got to go to my chiropractor. And I was like, that's basically a witch doctor. I mean, I don't think it's really medicine. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
I've been told so many things about chiropractors and also like physical therapists, and luckily I've never had like serious back issues other than the doctor also asking, so do you have any back issues? I'm like, only when I fall out of my bed from said nightmares, but otherwise I'm fine. I do not have a Casper mattress. Just hint, hint. But I don't know. Like, I'm afraid that if I, like, I'm afraid I'm going to become dependent on it. Like, I'm quite dependent on Claritin D at some
point. I think it's a little bit like, isn't it at least just a little bit like ear candling? We're like, oh, it's pulling out these toxins. No, actually, that's the ash. Like, that's what that is, you know? Here's one thing about this. It's like, I don't want to disparage something that helps people. We just talked about this on Back to Work. Like, it's really hard to understand what's going to help a given person at a given time with a given problem. And I think, in fact, turns out, I think it's the medical people that I'd like to hear saying that more. Like, I had a gastroenterologist who basically just threw everything at my situation. I had $600 a month being spent on basically like enteric aspirin that dissolves in your ass at the right time. And eventually he got down to, you know, why don't you try cutting out these foods? Find out if there's foods that bother you. Take this stuff, this probiotic called Culturelle. And you know what? I went on the Atkins diet and I got better in about 8 days. So I don't rule out the fact that there is voodoo that works. And specifically to chiropractic and acupuncture, it's a little bit like a lot of things where I believe I can take a lot away from Buddhism without finding anything supernal or spiritual about it. For me, it's
yes.
It's all philosophy and ethics and psychology.
It's a little bit about that article that horrible article that you cursed us with that we will not be putting in the show notes about the
nitrous?
General
anesthesia nightmare. Oh. Yeah.
And it's like this reporter, this health reporter, researcher, whatever, had to like get surgery, and he called the anesthesiologist the night before and he said, listen, I'm worried I know too much about this, right? And he's like, I can see right through it, and I've reported on this too much and read too much about it, and I'm aware that general anesthesia, it's less of a, it's like portrayed as a science, and the guy wears like a white doctor's coat when he does it, but it's basically, you're just getting someone really high so they don't know what happens. It's just sort of a,
you've got to get somebody exactly high enough, no more, no less. And I don't think we're that much further. We're not that much further than like the MASH era and how well that works. I think it still takes an incredible amount of expertise and not trial and error. But no, you're right. We shouldn't read that. I just want one last thing to close this is that like
I have a turns out at the end of this story. But
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut off the turns out. No, I just want to say I don't want to disparage that because here's the thing. I know people. My mom quit smoking from hypnosis. She tried everything her whole life. And she went to like a Days Inn for a seminar, got hypnosis. This is around the time of Nevermind. She never smoked another cigarette the rest of her life. So, I mean, that sounds wackadoo, but like, guess what? Nothing else worked. Chiropractic, like Buddhism, I think like you don't need to buy into this as a worldview if there's an element of this that helps you. There are people with chronic pain that can't be helped. And something like CBD oil, something like acupuncture, if that helps you, for the love of God, don't worry about what I think. I'm just more concerned about like selling this. I think chiropractic as a worldview is fucked, personally. But like, I think it can help people.
That I totally agree with. And, you know, like I've seen too many like James Randi videos to know what these chiropractors have these like oh, you get a subluxation in your spine and it causes autism. And it's like, you know, all right, buddy, it really is. I mean, I don't know, like I'm just too skeptical and I've read too much of this bullshit to know that it's I don't know. I feel like when if you go to a chiropractor and it works, what you have is some sort of fake problem. You have some sort of malady, and a fake solution will offer relief from it because whatever is in your mind that's causing your, you know, anxiety or pain or whatever phantom thing is that, like, you know, you know when crazy people talk about being sick and they're like, oh, I've seen every doctor in the world, no one can say what's wrong with me. It's like, yeah, because there's nothing wrong with you. It's in your head. And that's why when you finally, you know, take some sort of homeopathy or go to a chiropractor or whatever it is, they offer some, you know, cockamamie solution that doesn't really do anything, but it addresses the whatever was in your head in the first place. Acupuncture, I think, actually does work in like double-blind clinical trials. I don't know what the mechanism is, but I'm pretty sure.
Can we talk about Scott Forstall's thing?
What is it about acupuncture?
Yeah.
Please.
So he did an interview that I definitely haven't watched about four times and like broke his silence about the iPhone, except not really, just told a lot of really well-rehearsed stories, kind of like a keynote. Mm. And apparently he was dying. And Steve, of course, being that guy.
He was dying?
He was totally.
Of what?
What do you have?
He had like a pukey thing. Like he was, the doctors didn't know. That's the thing. And Steve like found this crazy acupuncture shaman.
That's, listen, that's what half the people at Apple who worked for Steve Jobs were dying of, a pukey thing, because you'd work for 3 years and he'd fucking throw it in the fish tank and say, get the bubbles out.
Well,
right? And you'd pee and you'd vomit immediately on the floor. No, make it better.
why do you keep barfing, Scott? It's a condition.
but he asked the acupuncturist, he's like, okay, if I don't believe in this at all, will it still work? And she's like, yeah, I'm going to be manipulating your stomach. And so you have no control. And then he got better within a week. And all these doctors were like, yep, you're better. And the interesting
so
thing he
weird.
Said was like, there were some young doctors who were like, no, it was all in your head. That's how it was all in your head. And you were convinced that you were better. So it was like the nocebo effect that got him sick.
Yeah,
and then
got
a
there before me.
That,
you got to watch that video because that explains a lot of this.
But he said that older doctors, and I found that too. When I go to older doctors, they're more willing to be like, yeah, I don't fucking know. Because when you come out of medical school, and all of my friends who are in med school, they're like, yep, I know this. And they diagnose people with everything. Whereas, the big boys that are adults are like, yeah, no, I mean, so much has changed. We have no idea what's going on or why this is happening. So good luck.
Well, turns out. Oh, by the way, I do want to add, this is one of the hallmarks of bullshit alternative medicine, is if you have to believe in it for it to work.
Yeah, exactly.
That should be a huge alarm bell that it does not actually work. Because
when you put it that way, it sounds like kind of crazy.
Here's the thing that no one's ever said is, listen, we're going to do the chemotherapy, but you've really got to believe that it's going to work, right? These antibiotics, they're pretty good, but if you don't believe in them, boy, they are going
to
be
do everything I can to land this plane, but for the next 2 hours, I want everybody on here to pray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all have to clap for Tinkerbell. Yeah. No,
I believe.
Turns out I went to Joe's chiropractor. I've been like two or three times. My thinking was my back hurts so much, I'll try anything. And I already know that if I go to my actual doctor and say, listen, my back really hurts, he's going to tell me, lose weight and here's a prescription for like muscle relaxers. And I don't want to lose weight and I don't want to take muscle relaxers. So what's left is like witchcraft. So sure, I'll try it. And it's covered under my Blue Cross.
You're covered for witchcraft. What kind of deductible you get on witchcraft?
Well, I haven't actually purchased any.
Do you bring belladonna or like some kind of like a monkey's paw?
All right, Mr. Tamkin, we're just gonna go ahead and schedule you for 5 weeks from now, and that's gonna be two fingers from a monkey's paw.
No, it's incredible because all of the mystic wisdom of the East, they do still take cash. So. So I went.
Priceless.
He took like an X-ray of my back, and I met with him, and that was like sort of the first meeting. And he told me showed me like a model of the spine. He's like, well, the bones are supposed to fit together this way. And then I went back for my follow up, and he had the X-ray of my upper back and sort of put it on the light board. And he had fucking Dr. Francis is the guy that I'm seeing. He's extremely handsome, and he had sort of taken his like protractor and drawn all these sort of like angles and numbers on and like lines over my spine. He's like, well,
like you're going to be used to cast a spell.
Yeah, it was very, and he said it very confidently. He did that thing that con men do where it's like he got me nodding along. He's like, well, he's like, as you know, it's like the disc goes in between the what do you call it of the spine, bones of the spine or whatever. And and I'm nodding because like he starts off with something that and then it's like then he starts off on his like, well, this is at a 45 degree angle, we need to get it to a 7 degree angle. And I think the theory is that once someone's nodding, they'll just continue nodding to whatever is said next, basically. And I'm extremely skeptical, but he did. So I got I've been adjusted a couple times, which is basically he just like cracks your back, feels incredible. And
I want that so much right this second. I want it so much.
It feels great. I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know that I can't speak to whether it has any long-term pain relief or medical benefit, but boy, does it feel good to have someone like crack your back. He does one where he sort of, I lie like sideways and he'll sort of like rotate my hips away from my back and it just, the whole thing is just like pop, 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 pop.
What's he wearing when he's doing
this
that?
This sounds so sensual.
He wears like a fitted button down shirt tucked into his khakis.
Do you get to pick? Like, could you ask him to wear a cape or something?
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't thought about that.
You should find out. They should include that in alternative medicine. If it helps to be twisted.
Joe goes with her husband, Andy, also a writer for Cards. And yesterday, Joe watched Dr. Francis adjust Andy, and she said it was very sensual. He's very handsome. So
send me a photo.
Okay, so I'll just try and surreptitiously take a photo.
Hey, what's up? What's up, Andy? How's it going, man?
Also, one time I was waiting in the waiting room, and you could sort of hear there's like a physical therapy area, and I could hear the old ladies in the physical therapy area talking about Cards Against Humanity, which was very weird. But anyway, there's an adjustment. And then traction, which I really do not understand this. You just sort of like lie there in like a, how do I put it? It's like a belt that like lifts your back in the right position. You just sit there for 15 minutes and I don't know, it's fine.
Is this guy also a sex therapist and has all these
traction, the traction thing is very BDSM, honestly.
Did he make you sign a contract?
I didn't sign any paperwork, I don't think.
He might have gaslit you a little bit.
I don't know. The traction, I don't know. I don't know. I go on Twitter and I read Twitter for 15 minutes. It's not that bad. But here's the thing is then there's exercises. And he has this, I do these like different sets of exercises. Some of them are for my neck and some of them are for my lower back. And like one of them is like you lie on a tennis ball and sort of roll this tennis ball into this part of your back. And there's another one that's basically like push-ups that's sort of modified push-ups that like stretch a part of your back. And this is the part that I feel is, like, not bullshit. Like, this is the part that I can sort of understand the mechanism, which is it is exercises that, like, address the muscles in your back that are sore.
It feels like basic anatomy and physics. My wife does this. Like, when we're watching TV at night, she'll frequently be down on the ground doing, because she's very athletic, and she'll be down there doing these wackadoo stretches. But they help her a lot. They help her with her performance and with her, you know, not... You know, she runs pretty long races on trail races, and like, you know, that's hard on a body. And I totally see that. I mean, it's not fun, but like if you're trying to avoid RSI, you got to kind of make yourself do these dumb exercises through the day, you know?
I'll say, the program he has, so one thing that I like about Dr. Francis is that the plan he will put people on is you go for, I believe it's like, for me, it's like 10 weeks. But Joe's been to a bunch of different chiropractors, and a lot of them are like, okay, well, let's make a plan so you continue to come here for the rest of your life.
Can I ask a question? Did she go for a certain condition you can share? Was it like a pain?
Yeah, Joe had scoliosis as a kid, and so she has like a curved spine. So she has an actual medical thing, and she does get real medical treatment and all of that for it, but the seeing the chiropractor really helps her. I will say, so now I've been, you know, I don't know, a couple weeks I've been going, and my back hurts less, so I'm not going to make fun of it too much.
Yep.
Every time that you say Dr. Francis, I can't help picturing my cat in a little doctor office, walking on my back.
There's a thing in Japan where you can go and you lie on a table and they put a cat on your back and it makes muffins on your back and it's called a cat massage.
Yeah, I tried to train him how to do that, but he's too much of an idiot.
You need two people for that. Nurse Ness.
That's my cat. People don't. She's more private. I don't put her picture on the internet.
Oh, sorry. Cut that out.
do either of you ever like crack your neck?
Oh, yeah. Constantly.
Okay, I got to do it now. Oh, I wonder if you can hear that. Oh, God. Oh, everything. Oh, just talking
I can sort of rotate my shoulders and snap half of my back.
God.
That also helps because you have to get a good crack. I'm a back cracker too. I'll do a neck crack. I'll make my wife squeeze me until I crack. I'll make her do three specific squeezes at different spinal levels at the sea level, and then that will give you a good. But here's the thing: also, if you want to do a good neck crack, you got to relax. You got to let go and let God.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You can't do it when you're tense, or you won't get a full crack.
That's when Dr. Francis does the neck adjustment. he snaps my neck like Arnold Schwarzenegger, executes a bad guy. He like gets behind me and just like really quickly, like off to the side.
That,
and I'm
that's
like,
how they get you. It's like when they put the earring onto June. Like you say, I'm going to count to three, and then on two, you hit it. Boom. That way, you have the element of surprise as a cat doctor.
I really feel like he could snap me like an evil henchman in a James Bond movie. Like he could just kill me. He could overestimate one. You know,
you're carrying a lot of tension in your spine.
There could be a raccoon on the roof, and the noise could startle him, and he could go right as he's snapping my neck, and just cleanly snap my spine, and I would die.
Oh, not again.
Here's a lead from a news article that I really liked this week. I wanted to share with you guys. This was from a website called The Wrap. Whipped cream and models can be a tricky combination. Sometimes it leads to the creation of a classic album cover, and sometimes it leads to tragedy. French Instagram model Rebecca Berger has died at age 33 after a whipped cream canister exploded, striking her in the chest.
Oh,
NBC reports.
That's not funny.
That's a hell of a lead, though, isn't it? Isn't that quite a journey?
It wasn't Whippets. She wasn't doing Whippets?
What are Whippets?
I think it was a photo shoot.
Oh, no. So it was a technical error.
You can Google. I did Google it to confirm that this wasn't fake news.
Okay.
And it is real news, and this model did die from being struck.
That's pretty funny.
In the chest by a whipped cream can.
Hold up. What are Whippets? Is this another drug that I have no knowledge of?
Yes.
Okay.
Whippets
You don't need to explain it. We shouldn't explain. Right. Is this one of those things where you can like sniff the glue at the bottom of the can?
Oh, listen, I don't care. We're sending the kid.
No.
The kids are already already taking all kinds of medical advice from this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
All right. Here's the whip. You should explain Whippets, Marlon.
No, it's all right. I don't want to upset her. Are you guys getting all the cat doc? Are you guys getting all the cat doctor photos?
Yeah. I am indeed.
So okay. Whippets. So you you open up a new can of whipped cream and
well,
you...
yeah, this is the starter way. The starter way is you suck off the top of one of those crappy whipped cream canisters.
A ready whip cream.
Ready whip, exactly.
And you get a little
so.
It's like a popper. You get a little rush.
It's popper's a different thing, but
It's like in Wonder Woman. The
yeah,
Doctor
Doctor Rebentrop. Yeah, mm-hmm. when he snorts up Mrs. Poison's special.
Yeah, he does a whip it, and then you get super powered and you smash a table into splinters.
Every time the president's social media manager goes off like that, I imagine he's just popped one of those right under his nose.
You didn't see I'm not fired.
There's just a bunch of whipped cream cans all throughout.
Oh yeah. I put some letters on a photo that I got from photo stock. Oh yeah.
You know, let's start with
the president's not being sued. You're being sued. Go check your facts, sir. If you'll see, there's a litigation underway. You're on the wrong side of it, brother.
FNN Fake News Network. My asshole's the size of a grapefruit.
I can pass anything through here. It's like a large church that accepts refugees. Let me start over. One time I ate an automobile and I didn't even care.
You know, from now on, is it Dan Scavino? Is that his name? Let's just agree from now on we will read his tweets in the voice of, say, Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Make sure Flash is enabled, bitch.
So what you do is, here's the deal. If you want to make home whipped cream, this is one of those...
Oh, we're still doing it. All right, go on.
Forget it. No, I'm done.
You don't even deserve an explanation.
Wait a minute. You can get a whippet off of home whipped cream?
Oh, sweet Jesus. Oh, you're like little babes.
Mm. What are you doing? You know, where does the gas come
from?
The stand mixer?
God damn it. Here's the beauty part. Okay, you go to a head shop. Head shops are great. In the 80s, they were hilarious because they sold all of this stuff that was there for a different reason, and you bought it to get fucked up. And they had handwritten signs that said, this is not to get all fucked up, this is to make a lovely dessert topping. So, you buy an entire fucking box of 10 or 12 of these things. It looks like something you might put in your butt. It's like a little scuba can, like maybe the circumference of a nickel, maybe 3 inches long.
Oh, I have those to fill up. So I have that in my flat kit. So if I get a flat tire on my bike, I pop one of these things and it rapidly, it's like some sort of
that
compressed
same thing.
Gas.
High pressure. Then you get a cracker. So you get this little, usually I had a brass one that was pretty sweet, and you put it into the cracker, and then you attach a child's punch balloon to that. Like punk, 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 right? And then you go crack. It fills up the entire child's punch balloon with nitrous oxide. You inhale it, and then you dance really hard to Susie and the Banshees for 2.5 minutes.
Oh, y'all say tantalizing dust.
I can do a pretty good balloon inflating sound effect. Can I perform that on the podcast for you?
Do it.
Okay. Hang on, let me. I gotta. I get myself ready.
Wait a minute. Did you just blow up a balloon?
No, really good. It's just a sound effect I know how to do.
Shit, dog.
So, did you develop this technique to get girls or what?
Party trick.
I mean, that was
indeed
very impressive.
I forgot that I could do it, honestly.
Oh. All right. Dig-dug-dig-dug-dug-a-dig.
Poppers are different. Poppers are amyl nitrate.
No, they caught...
I don't think that I like poppers or laughing gas.
Huh.
They make me feel dizzy and upset.
Yeah. That's pretty much what it says on the tin.
I mean, that's how most drugs at the end.
No, but right at the beginning, I'm like, ooh, I feel dizzy and upset.
All right.
Dig dug.
Can we talk about the Trump Time magazine thing just for one minute?
Honestly, you guys know how much I consume Trump news and Trump Twitter. I literally do not understand this meme. I missed the whole train.
Yes.
I missed it.
So when I came home and immediately my wife just reads to me, a Time magazine with Trump on the cover hangs in his golf clubs. It's fake. And my brain could not process that for a second.
Wait.
You gotta read this. This is peak. What's his name? Fahrenthold? Is that his name?
Yeah.
This is, oh my God. There's so many levels to enjoy this on. An immediate level that you will enjoy this on is his awesome, well, actually, of everything that's wrong with this fake cover and how you can prove it. But he doesn't do it in this meh, meh, meh. He just goes through fact. Oh, there was no Time magazine that week. Oh, and that's a headline from last week. And guess what? They don't use straight quotes. He's curly quotes.
well, just reading his headline, I was like, wait, he's like he's jumbled in his golf clubs? What's happening? I'm like, wait. Like, I could not comprehend what was happening for a second.
So among the other things that David Fahrenthold has uncovered that hang in Trump's golf courses, I don't know if you guys are follow all this shitty gossip, but
we do.
There was the portrait that Trump purchased. Trump's used his charity to purchase a portrait, an oil painting of himself, which hangs at Mar-a-Lago. He also has a plaque showing the all-time course high records of his golf game or whatever. And he is number one on all of his golf courses. Although in interviews with caddies and stuff, a lot of them say, I have literally never seen someone cheat as rampantly and play as poorly as Donald Trump.
Oh, man.
He's apparently a...
And he drives on the green.
Oh, he drives where the fuck he wants.
I don't care. But for anybody who has the slightest understanding of the way that golf works, I mean, this would be like going bowling and all your friends are being careful to wear the right shoes and you go out and just take a fucking dump right in the middle of the wood. you do not go anywhere near the green in your car. I don't care. But for people who do golf, you go, how could you have any respect for golf? You own this course. And he's probably all like, yeah, I do own this course. I drive wherever I want. I'm a big boy.
He also, some other golf etiquette that first I had to learn that this etiquette existed, and then I was delighted that Trump violates it. So he plays through every hole on the course, no matter who or what is happening.
Oh, come on.
So apparently in golf, there's an etiquette around
if the group that's behind is playing markedly faster for a hole or two, I think it's considered gracious for the one in front to say, hey, would you guys like to play through? You offer it. Mm-hmm. And then you can accept it. But you would never just say, hey, pull over. Daddy's coming by.
He just pulls right up to the hole, makes everyone stand aside, and takes a swing. The other thing is when Trump plays in a group, even if he's playing with other business leaders or world leaders or whatever, he always goes first on every hole no matter what, which is also apparently a big taboo. It's funny. I almost put – there's just some article about all this, and I almost put it in the show notes. And I was like, I don't fucking care. I know this is a whole premise, a whole thesis of the podcast of how funny all this stuff was. And it's just – it's just changed.
You crossed the Rubicon the other night. You seem like you kind of reached, and you're already such a karma suck about letting us have any fun with any of this, which is fine.
No.
But it feels like you've reached a certain point with this where it's literally not funny to you anymore.
I guess I felt I guess I just feel that it's crossed a line for me, a combination of the trivia of, oh, he eats his steaks well done, a combination of the trivia with the actual scandal, the Russia shit, which doesn't really, like, affect anyone or really matter. I mean, maybe they'll get him, maybe they won't, whatever, but, like, it's, you know, where it's just crossed a line into being, it's like the only thing. Like, what about the power? It's fucking crazy. Like, that's not enough. Like, that's trivia, guys. That's like, I'm not mad at you guys. I'm mad at the, like, Democratic establishment. But, like,
it's a form of self-soothing where, like, you feel right. Like it's like your tweet that I hope you don't get annoyed that I do this, that I constantly retweet, is that feeling of, oh, this has got to be it. Even as you know, there's no way that this will ever be it. And meanwhile, you know, Rome is burning.
Right, I came through. I think I'm through the other side. If I made that tweet thinking it was ironically funny that Trump was doing all this awful shit and no one cared, and it was so shocking and brazen, and it just had, there was a sort of, I don't know, black humor to it. To it's no longer funny; it's actually real. He actually is really doing bad things, and nobody cares. And it's like a total failure to articulate like policy alternatives. Like, you don't hear about single payer health care. You don't hear about any sort of alternative, like, you know, non-interventionist or like peaceful, like, foreign policy alternatives, like, nothing. Like, we don't have any, like, infrastructure alternatives, nothing. There's nothing. All we have is some fucking gossip about how he colluded with Russia. And, like, again, it's like, why pick that battle? Because the thing is, the deed is done on Russia. It either happened or it didn't happen, and the investigation is either going to nail him or it's not going to nail him. Nothing that we do or the Senate does or anyone does will change it. It's like, it's a trial now, right? So it's like you're, like, gambling. You're, like, putting it all on red. It's like the fates are sealed. Like, he either broke the law and Mueller's going to get him, or he broke the law and Mueller's not going to get him, or he didn't break the law and Mueller's not going to get him. But, like, why gamble, like, the whole fate of the country and our freedom and everything on that? Like, it's insane. Like, why not at least try to put up some sort of meaningful opposition, like, be about something other than, oh, Trump eats 2 scoops of ice cream. Isn't that crazy? It's like, the American people don't give a shit. We already tried this, and we already had an entire national campaign for a fucking year about what a bad person he was, and we still elected him president. So what else do we have?
Yes, you're right. But the problem is that it's when you see something that it continues to overwhelm you at a time when you think you are not capable of being overwhelmed anymore. And when you are overwhelmed by the cascade of everything that's already happened, plus this, plus how much this continues to show that this man has no character or shame. And when that happens, I think maybe this is how it's supposed to work, but that's why I think it's so hard to avoid. You're like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Am I the only person seeing that somebody used a .psd file that floated around the internet a few years ago, and down to the same barcode as in that PSD?
that
basically
part.
Somebody on his staff did that, and that was okay. Yeah, I know you're right. I know I should be doing my 5 calls and all that kind of stuff. It's nothing.
I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at you guys. I think it's fine for us
sure
to have a podcast
are.
And
sure
joke
you
about
are.
This.
You're
no,
mad.
I'm really not. I'm mad at Senate Democrats, and I'm mad at my friends who work on the Hill. That.
What about John McCain? Are you mad at John McCain? Doesn't he kind of bug you a little bit?
John McCain can suck my balls. Yeah. John McCain. He's such a fucking equivocator. He's like, oh, I don't, he's like, I'm not really not happy with the process of how this healthcare bill is going. Well, guess what, bitch? Vote against it then. You support, you're in a fucking enabler. Like, either draw the line or don't, but stop doing this bullshit where you get credit for being principled because you complain about Trump, but then vote with him every time. All this entire fucking party, they have no principles.
Yeah. It's also that, like, to me, he is the, a kind of encapsulation of why I don't like words like problematic as a way to describe something. Problematic describes how you feel about something. It doesn't describe what's bad about something. And so when people like, and the liberals, for God's sake, we know how bad they are about this. That's really problematic. Well, tell me fucking why it's problematic. You can't change something by calling it problematic. That's just code because you don't want people to at you. Now, with McCain, he will come out and say, well, you know, I have a lot of concerns about this and I'm blah, blah, blah. And then fucking a week later, yeah, he voted for it. Like, go look at the record. It's bananas. But he's always got these two responses. On the one, he gets to be the principled guy that everybody respects and wants to be pulling for. And then on the other hand, he pulls this same shit and he's just another one of these fucking shitlords in the...
When that guy dies, we're going to have to listen to so much bullshit about what a statesman he was and oh, civility is dead in America. And it's going to be such a fucking hagiography of that guy. I'm not going to be able to stand it.
Anyways.
The thing that's killing, like, it's, oh God, no wonder I've fucking wrist problems.
You got nightmare. You know like, what it is, Alex? You got nightmare fists. You got the fists of nightmare.
My nightmare fists. If I can understand why, like you said, Merlin, if I can understand why something is bad or why something is problematic, but I can't understand why the healthcare bill is bad because we can't fucking see it, and senators can't even fucking explain it or talk about it.
Right. What do my calls do
if I can't say why I don't like it?
There's 48 people in the whole country that want that.
Now the White House has this new line they were doing yesterday where they were like, the Democrats, they were against the healthcare bill before they even saw it. They never even gave it a chance. Mm. It's like, what are you talking about? There's 72 hours between when everyone sees it and when it's going to be voted on. Anyway, I firmly believe that the leadership has the votes and they're probably going to ram that thing through. So at this point, I don't think we'd be having this recess if they. I mean, I think they're very confident that they have the votes. However, listen, if anyone wants to do anything, please, for the love of Christ, even if you live in a blue state, call your senators and demand that they oppose this bill. Make them pay for it. They have to feel. Do you guys? People don't understand this. The fight is not over when the bill's released. It's never over. You have to make them fucking pay every single day of their life. You have to make them. Rue the day that they vote for this thing. If you have a Republican senator, you have to call them, literally set a calendar alarm and call them 3 times a week and say, you betrayed me and my family by voting for this bill, and just make them...
Fuck 3 times a week, every single day. It takes 5 minutes.
Make them pay for it. And if you have a Democratic senator, call them and say, why didn't you do more? Mm-hmm. Blowback. You have to have blowback, because once they're done with the health care bill, we're going to get to tax cuts and they're going to slash entitlements. And once we're done with entitlements, it's going to be national security. It's going to be a rolling thing of one thing after another. And if they never feel the heat of this, if what they learn from this is that they can ram this legislation through and there's no meaningful consequences, then boy, it's going to get a lot worse. And they're going to learn the lesson from this, that this sort of like opaque policymaking procedure with no protection for the minority, that Americans will just sort of tolerate it and they'll get mad online but not meaningfully do anything. You know, I keep telling people, and then there's this also this like whole narrative. Oh boy, this is depressing. Sorry.
Yeah.
There's this whole narrative of
you guys
like
should check out these Dr. Cat pictures.
There's this whole narrative that the Democrats have, or that you see, of like, well, it's okay that Republicans are voting for this because they're throwing away. Like, we'll definitely retake the House and the Senate if they do this. Like, they're signing their, you know, like they're like suicide note here. And even you know, in the fucking idiot Democrats in the House were singing, "Hey, hey, nah, nah, goodbye." Yeah. Like, you know, like that, ugh, like.
Yeah, like,
singing
what
when
are
this
you,
bill
nine?
Passed, like, what is wrong with you? Like, have some fucking, have some dignity that millions and tens of millions of Americans just lost their health care and their children are going to die. And B, you just fucking lost. Could you have some shame? Could you be embarrassed? Could people be mad that they're losing for one minute?
You've made me
losing.
I want to compliment
you. Why is everyone
here
so proud of losing?
Well, because we beat the expectations. You've made me realize. No. I'm here to say.
Fist.
You have made me realize how funny that is and how sad that is when the response is, yeah, we got them right where we want them. We lost the election, but we performed by 5%. And you're like, oh, God. Tell it to the refs. Jesus.
By the way, John Ossoff, that whole narrative of like, wow, really strong showing in a red district. He did 1.5 points worse than Hillary. Do you guys know that? That was lost in the whole narrative. You know, he did worse. You know, we spent $13 million on that race and he did worse than Hillary.
Yeah, but I think, let's be honest, we're going to be losing a lot worse than usual, although we will continue to lose. I think it's a very, very exciting trend.
I hate losing. I hate it. And I don't understand why it's so, people get so fucking defensive whenever, like, when this, I was mad yesterday about this healthcare bill. And, like, people get so mad at me. I'm like, I hate losing. I'm so mad at our elected officials that they're, and the Senate Democrats, because they're such losers and they're not meaningfully slowing this thing down or doing anything other than the symbolic to prevent it. And people get so defensive and salty. It's like, why? What do you like losing? Like, it's okay to be mad at these people work for you. Like, make them fucking work for their dinner.
I mean, but, fuck, even if you don't care about losing, like, your friends are going to die. You will have friends
yes.
who you can't, like, they won't even be able to get fucking chemo.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to afford antibiotics. You know how much antibiotics cost? They're like over $100 to fix a strep throat that will turn into pneumonia and then you die.
Listen, here's what I was going to say. The final thing I'll say about this, like, we have them right where we want them thing is, like, I don't, people have a short memory. So in 2013, when the Republicans did the government shutdown, do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah. What a time.
Every day on the news, there was pictures of the veterans who went to D.C., but then they weren't allowed in to see the World War II Memorial, you know, whatever. Very sad story. People couldn't get their their government benefits and their checks or whatever. That was the lowest period of popularity of a political party in American history in the recorded history of polling. The Republican Party polled, they hit a new bottom of the scale of how unpopular a political party could be. Hmm. They were historically the least popular party ever in American history during the time of that government shutdown. 1 year later, 2014, they won big in the midterms. So people have a short memory. If you think that this healthcare bill that's so unpopular is going to hurt Republicans in the midterms, you are in for another... you're in for a surprise, because people, the thing is, even if people have a very low opinion of Congress, they like their congressman. That's the sad truth. Everybody likes their congressman, even if they don't like Congress.
Here's the strategy. We go out there and we let them keep throwing strikes and we don't swing. Right? Wait for it. It's a long strategy. We let them get up. We let them get up by 7 to 8 innings, and then we make fun of how the pitcher looks.
Man, these Dr. Cat photos.
Oh, look at that one's got it. Look, it's got a real stethoscope. You can tell he's a doctor.
Salon, it has been widely reported that Trump has been unable to hire any top firms to represent him because they believe it is likely he is likely to shoot his mouth off against their advice. According to Yahoo News, one lawyer said the concerns were as follows, quote, "The guy won't pay and he won't listen." So after Comey's last public testimony, Trump unleashed his longtime private lawyer, Mark Kasowitz, to rebut the charges, and it was not a smooth performance. The president apparently decided he needed someone with a little bit more experience in Washington. Since all the A-list defense attorneys were, quote, unavailable to come to the president's defense, he had to turn to the right-wing fever swamps and a man named Jay Sukalo, a familiar presence for viewers of Fox News. It's a bit unexpected for Sukalo to work for a president with a reputation as a crude libertine who clearly lacks any sincere commitment to religion or traditional values. Sukalo is best known for his work at the American Center for Law and Justice, the Christian conservatives' answer to the American Civil Liberties Union, which Pat Robertson founded in 1990. Now, why would Donald Trump hire a right-wing First Amendment lawyer rather than a defense attorney? Well, it's obviously because Sukalo is a, quote, legal analyst for Fox News, which Trump watches obsessively. He likely saw Sukalo, quote, defend him on TV one night and decided he would be a good defense attorney. So that is who is defending Trump now on this Russia issue. Hmm. It's like a TV talking head lawyer who he saw on Fox News. And you know what? That's because I think Trump fundamentally understands the issue, which is it's sort of an issue of like public perception and not. And it's like a, you know, he needs a Johnny Cochran because he's on a TV trial. And it's the he's performing the TV reality show of Trump's trial. And it's not an actual trial.
Happy Wednesday, guys.
Next door.
Oh,
Connie
no.
writes to say, subject line, no. suspicious person doorbells. A suspicious person and a potential house break-in occurred this morning when at 3:02 a.m. when a suspect rang the doorbell. Our camera captured 30 seconds, and then it cuts off right before the suspect potentially tries to kick our door open. Are you hearing this? Are you hearing this? I don't know if you're hearing this. Okay, the suspect rang the doorbell. Our camera captured 30 seconds, then it cuts off right before the suspect potentially tries to kick our door open. Mm-hmm. We have a tunnel entrance. This is the third time in the past 2 years someone rang our doorbell in the middle of the night, but we didn't have a camera before. I think the first time was a lady. The second time it happened, several months later, we tried looking out our living room window, but didn't see anyone. This incident occurred at Dingle and Dingle. Please be vigilant around the neighborhood, everyone. I have reported this information to the police. Neighbor Luke responds to say, thanks for sharing. Say she linked to a video. Thanks for sharing. Why do you think he says help in the video? He says help. Wow, he surely sees the camera. Scary and strange. Help. Thanks for sharing.
Well, classic misdirection when you're doing a con, right? You have when you do a con, here's the thing.
The Mini Coopers.
When you're running a con on someone, you have to give them something they already want. You know, it's like they're conning themselves with their own greed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what makes it work.
Had a person ding-dong ditch our house last night. Had a person ding-dong ditch our house last night. Could be burglars testing to see if anyone's home. Or could be those meddling kids. Scooby-Doo reference.
Classic.
Whoa. They wrote?
Scooby-Doo reference
in parentheses.
In parentheses? That's right, Raggy.
God damn it.
If he was in need of help, why would he try to kick in the door? Potentially.
I really regret never having signed up for the service when I lived in like downtown Chicago in like overpriced condo buildings.
Oh, I can tell you the number one issue of people who live in downtown Chicago. It's buskers playing the saxophone too loud. I've been to tons of like CAPS meetings and city council meetings where people complain about buskers playing the bucket drums too loud.
I've seen
crusty jugglers.
There's actually one guy who it. I'm just going to call it Sox Park because I forget which corporation currently owns the stadium.
Oh, isn't it called Guaranteed Rate Field now?
Yeah. It was like it's so bad.
Oh my
can
God.
You can you fucking believe that? I'm pretty sure it's called Guaranteed Rate Field.
I don't know what that is.
Welcome. It's a beautiful day here at Guaranteed Rate Field. And welcome here come the Chicago Sox.
Chico's Bail Bonds Baseballatorium.
Well, there's this one guy who just constantly on his saxophone plays the Simpsons theme song over and over and over again.
Oh, I know that guy.
Yeah, but he doesn't even collect like money anymore. And
off,
I think it's just
key.
I think it's just to annoy all the white people. And I love him so much.
He throws in those Steely Dan drop D chords.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Oh, Chicago treasure.
Okay, I have some real-time next door follow-up. I believe my cordless drill was stolen from my garage.
You do?
I think so.
Have you informed the police, Max?
I did not follow a police report. Well, I'm not 100% sure that it's not like lost in my house. But here's what happened was I have this garage door, and it's like I got like a smart garage door, so it's like a Wi-Fi garage door, so I can like use an app to close my garage, basically. And something it's very temperamental, and something has been wrong with it for like a month where it says like error code 13. And the only thing that seems to be wrong is that there's a function on the garage door where I can tell it, if the door is up, close yourself after 5 minutes or after whatever. You know what I mean? You guys have that, right, on your garage. That's not working. So instead it just flashes and says like error code 13. I don't know if like, I think like the sensor might be a little misaligned or who the fuck knows. Anyhow, the garage door does not auto-close. And there was some sort of incident a couple weeks ago where I ran to work or ran to a meeting or something. And I think it might have been Veronica and I like went out grocery shopping. We weren't even gone that long. But when we came back, the garage was still up, right? And I just didn't – I didn't know, you know. And I guess anyone could have just gone in and taken anything. And then this weekend, I was doing a little bit of yard work, and I needed my cordless drill, and sure enough, it wasn't there. So I think someone...
This sounds like a targeted attack. This sounds like active measures against Mr. Max Temkin. Knowing he's been so blithe about other people getting their cordless drills stolen, it's time for him to get his.
Okay, well, here's what I think happened, is I think that maybe there was like a jogger came by and engaged me in conversation while I was out watering the plants a couple weeks ago. And that's the mouth, right? That's the front man. Right, so he was there. He got my attention while my back was turned. A team of people that came in. They disabled the Nest Cam in my garage, which happened to be not working at the time of the theft. They broke the sensor that auto-closes the garage, and that's the groundwork, right? And then you know what they have is they have the fidgety, sweaty guy in the van across the street going, get out of there, get out of there. He's about to turn around. You know what I mean?
4 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. And then I turn around, and you think that they're still there and I'm going to catch them, but when I turn around, the camera cuts, and you can see that they're gone. They just made it. And then, of course, they waited until I was out, and sure enough, the garage door didn't close, and they sneak in and like, go, 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 he's gone. And they get in, and they take my cordless drill.
I mean, I can't think of another plausible explanation apart from you misplacing it.
I went to Home Depot, and I bought a new drill, brushless motor. It's pretty good.
That's what they do. They wait for the insurance money to come through. They're going to be straight back. They're going to shoot some Batman gas in your face. You're going to go down like Trotsky, and boom, two cordless drills.
Max has sort of breezed by one thing. It's kind of like how he doesn't like talking about Tesla and Merlin doesn't like talking about having an iPad. But you now have the keyless lifestyle. And I am very confused about how this is possible.
I don't. It's not keyless. I have one key.
What's the one key to? For? Like a
the
safe?
The key is to my house.
Still got a dumb house. Smart house.
Yeah.
No, I have
that's funny.
Lock on my house.
Well, you got a feature house. That's what you got, a feature house.
I actually know how I feel about this. I don't have any features in my house. I don't have any smart home shit.
Don't you have a tube friend?
A what?
The lady in the tube.
Oh, yeah. But I, you know, it's funny. I went on, I was curious, like, when the new Alexa came out.
And I was thinking mine arrives today, and the arm ants have already given up in less than 24 hours. It's so ugly. It's so fucking ugly.
Are you going to unbox it?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do a whole video.
Oh, hey, guys. Good. Like and subscribe.
I was so pumped for this thing. Even though, you know what? I'm never going to do, I don't do the video stuff now. I will never do the video stuff. There's no way I'm going to let them get my contact list. And then Marco posted a photograph of what the thing looks like from like a back rear, like a rear side angle.
Wait,
have
you can
you
do
seen
like,
it?
What's the video stuff?
Right now, they introduced this in advance of this one coming out. With your lady in a tube, you can basically upload your contact list and say it's okay for people to audio and video call me via my Echoes. And you can also enable, I'm sure you've read about
this. Wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. So you're going to call me. It's going to be 2 a.m. I'm going to be frying bacon in my with no shirt on. And the Echo is going to light up and it's Merlin's face is going to be there.
Oh, it's worse. Did you hear about drop-in? Have you heard about drop-in?
What is this?
Oh, you're going to love this. You're going to love this, Max. If you enable it, people on your list will be able to turn on your camera. So basically, you get they'll see. They said, "Hey, let's do a drop-in, right? Hey, go here, let's go see grandma." And then so at first it shows up like a shower door, like kind of bubbly, and then it automatically just turns the camera on. And they go, "Hey," so people just be in your fucking kitchen when it suits them.
Oh, this is very 1984.
Oh,
because the thing is, you don't know when they're watching.
Well, you can.
It's
you
that
get
they
a
have
second.
The ability.
Like a
it's
couple
that they
seconds
have the ability
to
watch
off.
You at any time.
Well, so there's a couple. I don't want to. And Joe Rosen, still, don't get mad at me. I do think that's a weird feature, and it's not on by default. But if you turn it on, then yes. But the thing is, also, it goes for anybody in your household, and I think for their contacts.
Hang on now. All right, hang on. All right. First of all right. Let me just say, with respect to the lady in the tube, let me just go back to this for 1 second. So I was debating, do I get the new thing? And I use, you know, there's an Alexa app, and you can go on. And one of the features of the app is it basically shows you a log of all the things you ask Alexa to do.
Oh,
right?
Oh, I love looking at this.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to see, do Veronica and I use this device enough to warrant me buying the new version of it? And if we use it a lot, I'll upgrade. And if it turns out we don't, we'll keep the one we have. And I went through, and we use it about 4 times a week to set a timer. And like one time in the last month, Veronica had to play WBEZ. So that's what we're doing with it.
Yep.
And I think maybe I've told it, like, you know, buy olives once or twice.
Buy olives?
Whatever.
Yeah, buy olives.
You know, I'm run out of something, and I'm like, you know, whatever. I need canola oil.
Yeah, yeah. I do it all the time.
But I'm curious, like, if you go into your app, does it, you know, because it's a little bit like Rescue Time, right? Like, you can have your story of your relationship with this computer, with this thing, but the data tells the true story. Like, are you really using this thing, like multiple times per day? All I use it for is setting a timer.
Alex?
Yeah, Mel uses it probably, like, 5 times more than I, because she does all the cooking and all the important things in
our
house.
Can you go into your app and read some of the things that you've told
her
to do?
I would love to.
She actually, because it can only be paired to one thing, so it's paired to her phone. Or maybe I can see it in the...
you guys are fucking married. Get an Amazon Family account.
I mean, it is cool.
That's like a shared iCloud account. It's such a disaster.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Or like when you get an email from somebody and it's like, it's from the Hendersons. It's like, well, that's weird.
But no, we turn the lights on and off. Oh, here we go. Like a million. What's the weather? What time is it?
I do a lot of streaming audio.
Yep,
I ordered toilet paper the other day.
What do you stream? Hang on. What do you stream?
KALW, KQED.
Oh, KQED is fantastic.
Yeah. And so you just say, hey,
you ever watch their live sessions they do in the studio?
Oh yeah, the tiny chair concerts. I do that, yeah. But it also, here's the part that Max is going to love. Max, if you go in, it'll also show you all the various times that it thought it heard you say something when you maybe didn't even know that it heard you say something. It just got triggered, as they say, as the millennials say. So,
wow.
And then
triggered
you can play
much?
Then you can play the audio of what you said, and it's frequently really funny what it thought you said from across the room. Apparently,
I've never gotten that.
Oh no! All you do just go into home and then click on you'll see the history there. The last thing it heard us say was, "What are the newest apps in the cellar?" It heard that. at one point, it heard me say, "Play God, Mommy." let's see. Should I use Tinder? Is nice to her? and heard me say. Game of Thrones. Yeah, I did ask that.
So are you using this thing legitimately? I mean, aside from times when it mishears you, are you legitimately using this thing like multiple times per day?
Yeah.
I mean, it controls all the lights in my house. All of them are, I mean, also there's only like at most 10 light bulbs.
Let me give you a scenario here that explains this a little better. Once you start, who fucking cares? Once you start using this, you stop thinking about it. And it's just a thing that you do. So I don't have a clock radio anymore. Because I wear my watch to sleep.
Don't you see that that's bad? Because eventually you just transform yourself. You're like living. You're in your Dale Gribble basement. Nah. You're taking your poppers and you're watching your security camera feeds. And you're like, oh, what's great about this lifestyle is eventually you just stop thinking about it.
I mean,
your skin is all pale. You're like, I don't even question it anymore.
You become a Cyberman. But stuff like, so here's the nice thing about, so to me, like saying, hey, dingus, turn on the hall lamp is not super helpful. What is helpful is, hey, dingus, goodbye. Or, hey, dingus, turn everything off. Or for me, I do this thing at night because I'm a weirdo. I say, hey, dingus, go red. And it turns all of my hue lights in the rooms that I'm in into this very dark red that makes it very conducive to, like, not being
awake.
How
did you not name that red alert?
You can do that. Mm-hmm. You can have it do whatever you want. No, you're right. You don't need this. This is not for you. But now the thing is, it's out for delivery. I'm gonna be so bummed. I pre-ordered this thing and like it looks. Have you seen what it looks like? Digga digga digga.
I have seen it. It looks like a chumby. It's a little chumby. Hmm. What if we all got this thing and did drop in for 1 week?
Nope.
I'm in. Nope. You're in. We're in. That's the challenge.
Oh, I like this challenge. Drop-in challenge.
Oh, God.
Drop-in challenge.
There's hey, nothing guys. You like more than getting your boss just appearing in your home at 2 in the morning.
Hey, what are you doing? Frying up some bacon?
You know what, you guys? I can tell you there is one very prominent internet circus performer who is not going to be loving this. I can see from here that you're buying the more costly red peppers. Why do you buy Brussels sprouts pre-cut? You could do that yourself and save $5.
I could just see Max popping up in my kitchen judging the food
with his
that
face
I'm eating
really
with a
close
spoon.
To the camera.
Yeah. Alex, why are you eating white bread with a spoon?
Why are you eating white bread and crying?
Have you ever made bread balls? Where you just roll them up in tiny balls and then
you got a cream for that now. Sure.
I showed
my daughter who has the same diet as you. She makes rice sandwiches. You guys sent me that wonderful photo of Alex eating a big old plate of Texas toast. I said, hey, here's Alex, because she really likes you.
With friend of the show, Casey Liss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Aaron Liss,
she said, what is that? Is that bread? I said, yeah, it's Texas toast. She goes, now I really want some Texas toast.
She got a real case of the bread balls. Oh. I gotta get my toaster. I get a raging case of the bread balls.
You can't take me up to the point of buying the bread and not let me make the balls, man. You're killing me.
Real-time follow-up. Digga, digga, digga. Copyright John Syracuse, 2010.
10.
2011.
2011. On the talk show with John Gruber, the live one, I just listened to it from WWDC.
You guys checked out my brother and me.
It was very funny. And who was it? Craig Federighi made some joke where he's like, he had some comment. He's like, during the keynote, I was able to say, hey, Siri. And everyone's Siris didn't light up. Oh, there goes my thing. And everyone's Siri didn't light up because we have like really good voice recognition. And then he made some joke to Gruber. He's like, hey, you can probably stop saying, hey, dingus now.
Yay!
Do you remember that? I just want to set the record straight. I am very confident that Merlin created that joke and the phrase, hey, dingus, on an episode of the talk show like a couple years ago when you guys were talking about voice technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel that you know, Merlin, that's your one accomplishment. You're known for this one thing. Why can't you just get the credit for
this? Can I just have a legacy of this one thing that I said one time? You know? I mean, I'm heavily credited with being the creator.
Am I wrong that you originated
that
joke?
Well, it's also funny because Dingus is a wonderful word that I think was brought back into nerd vernacular by one, John Patrick Gruber, when he had the Markdown Dingus on his site. So he, I feel like he brought Dingus back onto my radar screen.
No.
So I always started saying Dingus from hearing you on, like, Back to Work.
Yeah, you like Dingus so much, and then the last three albums. But, you know, that's fine. That's fine. It's really not just about email. Craig, here's the thing. I wanted to try out the new Siri Boy, and so I had, leave this out of the show. I had my new iPad, my old iPad, and my phone next to each other, all enabled.
I need a young iPad and an old iPad.
Never speak to me or my iPad again.
Please, my iPad. She's very sick.
Very sick. And I wanted to see who's the fast boy. And who got heard? And you know what? I'm here to tell you that whole like it only gets heard on one device thing. It ain't mastered yet.
Absolutely does not work. Sometimes I'm like I use that thing a lot when I'm like in the shower and I need to know some like what time it is or whatever. And if there's like other devices within range of the bathroom, they all fucking go off. And sometimes 5 minutes later, I get out of the shower and they're still in like Siri mode, like frantically trying to transcribe like the white noise in the house.
The other here's one. Like you know, I'm no engineering person, but can I suggest one? How about if it was heard by an Apple Watch on a wrist? Maybe always let that one win. Maybe put all your wood behind that particular fucking arrow. Because no, I don't want my daughter's iPad and this and all these other things going off. Like if you heard it from an Apple Watch, always let the Apple Watch win. It's not going to hear it unless it's on the wrist. It's not going to be on unless you've raised your wrist. You follow? Like I stand there and I sit there and I'm in the motherfucking kitchen and I've lifted it and I've got the screen on and I touch the crown and I say, "Hey, Dingus, set a pasta timer for 10 minutes. Remind me in 10 minutes to take out the pasta." All over the house, everything starts squeaking and squawking. It always hears me better on everything but my watch. I hate it.
Until this exact moment, I forgot that there was Siri on the Apple Watch. Absolutely forgot that it was there.
You can do dictation. You can open drafts.
I should probably use that occasionally.
You should. You can open drafts and do dictation.
You have a Siri Zero like I do, right? It's going to be like, hold on.
I'm ready to upgrade. I hope there's a new watch this year. I skipped the two because I felt that the time I was like, you know, I don't know if this is a lasting thing. Like I was like, I'm going to give it another year and see if I still wear this watch every day or if it's just sort of like a passing, you know, dalliance. And I forget my watch at home or leave it, you know, whatever. It doesn't charge overnight or whatever. And I fucking miss it. I use it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great product. Yeah. I use it all the time. But I mainly use it as a watch. Like, I don't have another watch. So this is like just, and I've never owned another watch. So I just like knowing what time it is. And I kind of look on there and it tells me on my calendar what's coming up. And that's the whole feature set for me.
I like
Am I not using
Mickey
it enough?
Mouse too. I use it for everything. I do use Siri to just add things to like my inbox and stuff. I'm trying to think of, and calendars. But the workout stuff has gotten really cool. Like even when I'm just fucking lazy ass. I
always
like,
forget.
But even if you just go for a walk and I'm like, yeah, look at those 5.5 calories.
I always forget.
I don't know. I think it's just ingrained in my brain because gamification works with me.
Oh yeah, that's me in sleep.
Yeah.
Follow up. Digga Gizmodo. There's no shortage of things to be mad about in late capitalism. Pretty high in the list, though, is the Eat, Pray, Love brand of pseudoscience promoted by Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop. Somehow, do you guys know about Goop?
Oh, yeah.
It's her Gwyneth Paltrow's lifestyle brand.
Oh, yes.
Somehow, Goop, which previously encouraged women to shove eggs up their vaginas, mm-hmm. has out-gooped itself. The brand is now promoting stickers called, quote, body vibes. The product, which I remind you is literally a sticker, uses, quote, NASA spacesuit material to, quote, rebalance the energy frequency in our bodies, whatever the actual fuck that means. Human bodies operate in an ideal energetic frequency, but everyday stresses and anxiety can throw off our internal balance, depleting our energy reserves and weakening our immune systems, Goop says on its website. Well, obviously, everyone knows that. Quote, body vibes stickers made with the same conductive carbon material NASA uses to line spacesuits so they can monitor an astronaut's vitals during wear come pre-programmed to an ideal frequency, allowing them to target imbalances. A representative from NASA's spacewalk office told Gizmodo that they, quote, do not have a conductive carbon material lying in the spacesuits.
Oh, man.
So, listen. Challenge. I think we need to buy these Goop Body Vibe stickers.
Yeah. Well, okay. How about this? Let me put a little bit of mustard on that sandwich.
Uh-huh.
We get the Goop stickers, and then we just pop in on each other. Hey, buddy, how's the sticker?
Are you rebalanced? How's your energy levels? Are you balanced right now?
You don't need to sharpen that knife. You just need to hone it.
This reminds me kind of like the Bluetooth enabled Diva cup. Like I don't.
Well, it's like it's very David Avocado Wolf to me.
It's your main man.
My main man, David Avocado Wolf, because you know it. I think this is a new technology. Yeah. Much, well, you know, like the avocado.
First they laugh at you, right?
That's right. Like the avocado, I think this is a way to harness the energy and I think you take this, you realize that gravity is just a social construct. And that men strive to float towards the moon. And you put these NASA stickers on, and it rebalances your carbons.
Let me ask you a question. You ever seen an unhappy astronaut? Not a thing.
I mean, the thing is that I've always said that human bodies operate at an ideal energetic frequency.
You've said that for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, any kind of stress or anxiety, it throws it right off.
Ugh.
Well, I just like to go to my chiropractor, get centered every day.
I really like how the Goop website has detox pantry essentials right next to the best sparkling wines in their shop.
It's Goop. I did watch the first episode of, I hesitate to say the first episode, the first 45 minutes of Planet of the Apps.
Mm.
I watched like the first three quarters of it before I had to turn it off. Mm. That's a very bad show. And among its many sins, it does not explain what's happening. Like, I'm constantly watching these people like preparing for meetings and like making pitches.
It knows that it's a Shark Tank ripoff, and it knows that you know it's a Shark Tank ripoff.
I was so fucking lost the whole time. I was like, wait, what? I was like, why is he meeting with them again? What's this meeting they're going to? Why do they need money? I had no narrative, like, connective thread that I was like, that I could follow.
I also don't understand. Do the like
who's
Gary
that?
Vaynerchuk?
Who
is
that guy?
Money?
Who is that dude?
That's Wine Library guy. He used to, back in the Revision 3 like Dignation days. He had a show where he would get excited about wine and like he was like the what was the guy?
Now Alex, listen to me. I'm a famous technologist, and I'm only going to tell you this because I care about you, and I want to be straight with you, and I'm going to give you the straight shit. You're an idiot. Your product sucks. I hope you die. Now, what are you going to do to fix it?
See, even you
also
mocking his voice
ring.
Is less annoying than his actual voice.
He is the wine guy. He turns out, Brady's Bits, he bought the app that Dan Benjamin and Dan Cederholm made, that corked app for tracking wines that you like. So he made that part of his wine empire.
Did you know that 95% of the wine bought in America is less than $12?
The devil you say.
I really feel like he is popping some sort of Dr. Poison poppers right before he walks on set, and he's just like, he's like, what are you going to do to stop Facebook from stomping all over you?
I like the idea.
What's your competitive advantage?
Oh, God damn it. I'm just so angry that you're going to get beaten. You haven't even started yet. I got balls full of anger. God damn it, wine is so fucking good.
I have big, huge bread balls full of opinions.
I got wine balls. They're fucking Chablis bullshit. Oh, you've got to, who's going to make this happen? Why would I want to buy it? I don't want to buy it. I don't want to sell it. God damn it.
I think Gwyneth needs to give them one of these NASA patches and just, you know, really bring them back.
They come back from the break and he's just covered with patches and
restore the dictator to hell.
Oh, okay.
Breaking news. Digga, the Goop. The Illuminage Touch, $495. The people at Illuminage have cracked the code on hair removal for bikini line legs, arms, and even face. This painless combination of radio frequency, RF, and intense pulsed light, IPL, energy removes hair more effectively than any other at-home device. And best of all, it works with all skin tones and the widest range of hair colors. $495, add the bag, done.
This is Alex Jones for New Age Bougie Women.
You're like a goddamn Wolverine. Get some of that off your face. Jesus Christ. I got a 5 o'clock shadow.
Did you guys ever see the Indiegogo for the laser razor? It was this like razor.
It's like Supergirl, like trimming somebody's hair with her eyes.
It was a razor that purported to use like a laser beam to like shave Meat you. Move. And they had this proof of concept video of this like ugly, bulky prototype. And it was a guy, and it was like an ultra close up of a guy's arm and his arm hair. So every arm was like a fucking tree trunk. Like it was this huge like macro close up, and he was very slowly and repeatedly dragging the like laser beam kind of thing across his arm, and like none of the hairs were going anywhere. And that was it was on its face one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Like it was this thing that obviously didn't work, and they raised like $1 million on Indiegogo.
God.
I mean, it's like, you know, you got to believe it. If it's going to shave you, you got to believe in it. If you don't believe it's going to shave you, it's not going
to
shave you.
A lot of people don't know that. That's why a lot of people die in knife attacks every year. They don't know you have to believe in the knife to be stabbed by it. I take away your power. I do not believe in you, good Sir Blade.
All right, dig, 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 dig. Dig Dug, are we going to talk about our challenge this week, Merlin?
Did you get a chance to watch the program, Max?
I did. I finished it this morning.
Do you want to talk about it? We don't have to.
Sure. Okay. I mean, it was a hard... all right. One more. First of all,
dig
I'm
dug,
sorry.
Dig,
set
dug,
up
dig,
the,
dig,
cha-
just
set
this
up
week.
The challenge.
Dig Dug. This week, the challenge was mine. My challenge was to watch the recent documentary about Stephen Sondheim on the HBO network, called Six by Sondheim. Stephen Sondheim is a writer of music and lyrics who's been around for a long time.
This was a new documentary?
No.
Okay.
Yes.
It came out last year.
Well.
Oh, okay. All right.
Jesus, turns out.
I thought maybe it was made in like the 90s. It has like a bunch of CGI, and all the CGI looks like it was like a Nintendo GameCube.
That's not how.
So I thought maybe it came out.
He's
in
not
like
actually
the,
that ripped, not... Alex. He's not that ripped.
All right, I'm sorry. Continue, Merlin. I'm sorry for interrupting.
We're done here. No, and so it's basically the story of this guy who's, I don't know, he's kind of like a songwriter. Like he's very hugely respected and revered, and he's kind of a big boy. He's a big shot, and it very wonderfully tells a lot of his story, his biography. And the context for it is like talking in particular about 6 songs from musicals that he's done. But it's really just an excuse to talk about this guy and his life. And I hope, interestingly to Max, how he works and how he thinks and how he functions as an incredibly interesting neurotic man in the world. And I find it wonderful, motivating, moving. And I've watched it 3 times this week. Six by Sondheim.
The first thing is, I didn't find him that neurotic. Like, he's just a guy who works hard and cares a lot. Am I supposed to have watched that documentary and been like, this guy is really
Given that the movie opens with 3 quotes from him about being neurotic, I think it's probably a pretty good guess he's a little bit neurotic.
He's Jewish, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Jewish people just talk about how neurotic they are. It's part of the culture. It's like saying that you have the best proctologist at the dinner table.
You're saying
like,
he's a fake geek Jew.
No, I'm just saying it's like you guys are reading too much into this. That's just him being a Jew.
All right.
That's not a thing. Talking about how neurotic you are is not a thing.
Do you want to read some more about late capitalism or?
No, I liked it. I really liked it. I just wish it was like this guy is. I don't know. I don't know enough about musicals to like all of the songs that they've. I haven't heard any of his musicals. I was very interested in the one at the end, the one about Sundays in the Park.
Yeah, that was a well done segment.
And that was the one that grabbed. That was the musical. If I had to pick one to go see based on the documentary, I think I would enjoy that one the most. But you know, I just don't think musicals are like that. I just don't think it's that great of an art form. Like, it's not for me. I don't know. It's just so corny. And it's like, I appreciate that he's like laboring so hard and he's at the top of his craft. He's doing this like really obscure thing. I don't know. I don't know.
Every single one
of the songs they played
comedy
sounded
cardboard
exactly
is
the
not
same.
Like
and
song.
They all, it was the same song 6 times and they all had some cranky old lady like dancing around with an umbrella and like belting it out. Like,
I used to be young.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Okay.
You want to go ahead and take the rest of the call off?
But I liked all the parts where he was being interviewed were magical. Like, he is such a, an interesting personality, and yeah. his talk about like the creative process, which I had a feeling you would like that
because
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. His thoughts about teaching and mentorship were incredible. I wrote down a couple of quotes from him that I really loved.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
The audience will know that they've been served a meal. Like, holy shit, I believe
that. And then
he
points. He does that point.
Yeah. Point. They'll know that they've been served a meal. So talk to people. I say that to people about card stuff all the time. It's a very difficult idea to talk about or convey. So I loved all that shit. I just wish that they'd... Okay, let me ask you another question. I absolutely did not
I want to hear what Alex has to say also.
Wait, I just have one point of order question before we get begin into this. Mm. So there were like two songs that dealt with these three young people who were trying to make it in musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that a musical they made for this documentary?
Is that an autobiographical?
There's two songs.
Yeah. They were made for this. It's got the lady from that TV show in it.
And I don't know who that is. Did he write them?
What's her name? Amerigo Vespucci. She's the girl from that that TV show. She's from what show is that, Alex? That she's on.
I don't remember. I do know she's in the Magical Pants. Movie, the sister.
Is she in the Sisterhood?
Yes. But also Darren Criss, who plays, you know, my favorite character on Glee. Not that I watched that show at all. But it was originally I think he made it in 1980. But
so that's a real thing he wrote.
Yes.
Okay. Is it meant to be autobiographical?
Yes.
Okay. But did they film that little crazy segment for the movie?
No, it existed as I think they made it. Merlin, I might be wrong. Didn't they make it for like a Tony's special or something?
The part with Amerigo Vespucci. I think that like the guy from Fantastic Mr. Fox. I think that which was done by Todd Haynes. I think they were made for the documentary.
Oh wow, that is an expensive thing to make for a documentary.
Well, like you know what I'm talking about, the Travis. Travis Cocker, Jarvis, whatever that guy's name is from Fantastic Mr. Fox and the band that's not Blur, the one with him singing the lady song and everybody stares at him. I'm pretty sure Todd Haynes made that for the documentary.
I agree. I felt like I got the impression watching it that whenever they showed a whole song from beginning to end, it was a special thing filmed for the documentary. And they had them for most of the six songs that they talked about.
Well, in any case, Alex, help me out here, buddy.
It seems like Max really enjoyed this, except for the part where there was singing.
Yeah.
If he did something,
they should make it 45 minutes long and make it much more consuming. You got to come out and tell a story. Tell a story.
There's another universe where this documentary got made, but Stephen Sondheim is just the best at painting model trains. And it's the same documentary to me. It's like, I mean, it's like I don't would never do this with my time.
How many people do you hire to write comedy cards? How many people are on your staff?
Well, okay, listen, I literally wrote this down. If you want to go there, I literally wrote this down in the notes. I said, basically what he does of like writing these, he picks a sentence and writes a song and there's a, it's basically like a parlor trick. It's like not that great. He just got extremely famous and they made a documentary for him and now he's like a personality. And it's like, it's like, that's like if people, and I literally wrote in my notes, this is like if someone interviewed me about writing Cards Against Humanity cards when I was like 80 years old. And I was like, well, at the time, what I was trying to do was develop an American opera. It's like, what? It's like you're just writing song and dance for people. Like, and you're good at it. I don't take it away that he's good at it. It's just like, can we like dial it down a notch? Like, Jesus Christ.
Initially, it was a card about farts, and I realized I wanted to serve them a meal, and so I made it about poop.
Yeah, but what was it about farts? We weren't getting to the heart of it.
It's like, and then you twirl your finger around.
I don't know. It's like you're writing a catchy song. I don't get it.
No, it's understandable.
That's a word. I mean, this is he's the most prolific writer on Broadway, other than perhaps Hammerstein, who was, as you know, they go.
Well, he's not. I mean, he's not as like balls out. Consistently crowd pleasingly successful as like Andrew Lloyd Webber, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
he used to be, I think.
Well, but he's had a lot of, as he talks about, he's had a lot of things that did not go great, and he's usually he's a little bit not Bowie, but he's a little bit ahead of everybody else, has been for a long time, and he has a very peculiar style, and like he said, it drives him crazy when, what was it, hummable? He hates the word hummable. Right,
that was amazing.
I
relate to that so hard. And my thing about that is when people say that games are addictive, I fucking hate that. It for the same logic and the same reason of like, it drives me nuts.
The whole like crux of this documentary though, which I was not expecting, is he's not like it was the whole teaching aspect of it. Like the way it's mm-hmm. cut together, I really like it. It felt brilliant. Like he's essentially been saying the same things like a good teacher for I don't know, like 30 years over and over. And they cut to bits where he's in his 30s talking about something, and in his 80s, he's saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that bit, there's longer bits on YouTube where he just teaches his songs. And you're right, he has not had like hit after hit after hit, but all of his musicals are so ambitious. And really, I like how they highlighted also songs that were meaningful to him or were groundbreaking or a good story, instead of just going to you know all of the typical hits. I mean they kind of like touched on some of them, like stuff from Sweeney Todd and Into the Woods, but that was those aren't good stories. They were successful musicals. There were hummable songs,
like, but they didn't tell us. I feel like there's this syndrome. I'm not trying to bag on Brian Wilson, but I feel like there's this kind of like this Brian Wilson syndrome where it's like, let's do another interview with Brian Wilson to talk about Pet Sounds, and or it could be something with McCartney, but you're like, okay.
All right, everybody, get in the sandbox.
Yeah, exactly. That's a hell of a story. The cat used it. But in this case, like, I didn't know a lot of these stories. I don't know a lot about this guy, and I think I'm cutting Alex off, so I'm going to stop in a second. But all I want to say is, you know what I knew going into this? Like, I know a bunch of his songs. I've watched tons of those YouTube videos with the blue background where he trains people to sing his songs. I know so much about Stephen Sondheim and his approach. I have never seen any of his musicals. The closest I came is I have seen some of the Johnny Depp movie, the Sweeney Todd movie. I've never seen any of his musicals, and yet around my house now, like I said, we're sitting around with the lyrics up on a laptop screen with the whole family singing Getting Married Today. Like my entree to this is another one of those Doctor Who type situations where like my entree to this is so weird. I am so fucking into Stephen Sondheim right now, and I've never seen one of his plays. Isn't that bizarre?
Very interesting. Well, I don't know. Like, the thing with theater is most people have not seen the shows that they would say that they love the music
well,
to.
Well, Merlin, you're not an old lady or a homosexual, so you can be forgiven.
Oh, God, that was my favorite line. I don't know. I've never seen a creator open up in the way that he does without sounding like he wants his audience to feel sorry for him. Like, I think every story he tells has a meaning and has like a teachable moment.
He's got so much, like, I'm so onto this because I'm with you on this, because I actually wrote down a few quotes of where he does this thing that is nearly unique, which is that he seems to be making a real study of what it means to be a human being in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. That sounds corny, but like, you know, and he's had some struggles that we can get to, but he seems genuinely interested in what's actually going on in the world. He wants to write songs that are about these kind of these strange things. He wants to challenge himself. But to the point about him in particular, you notice how often he says something self-effacing, like, oh, I have this, I can't really play with my left hand. But he's not doing it to go, oh, Stephen Sondheim, of course you're a good left-handed piano. He knows he's not good at that. And if he is mm-hmm. good at something, you know what he says? He says, I'm really good at that.
Yep,
I love that about him. And I love the fact that even when he talks about the shattering pain of his fucking mother telling him that she didn't want him to be born, you could see that it's a painful thing for him, but it's not something he's not telling you that story to make him seem more likable or sympathetic. He's telling you that because he's a student of humanity, and the mm-hmm. fact that that happened the way that it did helps him have a story about how humanity works. And now he applies that to what he does. He's not doing that for clapping. He's saying that because this has to do with his whole bigger Weltanschauung.
And it leads into the story about how, you know, the Hammersteins essentially adopted him.
I love that.
And became not only his mentors, but his parents. And then it turns around where, as I think it was, as Hammerstein was on his deathbed, he said that Sondheim was his greatest teacher. And
My friend and teacher. That teared me up.
Can we talk about my favorite segment that, you know, hit all the gay buttons?
Yep.
Oh,
I think
wow.
I know. There's so many. Well, before you get to that, because we should get to that, I just want to point out that this is without being in any way overt about it, this is a great gay text, is what I'm here to tell you. Even setting aside the amazing, heartwarming, coming out-ish footage and story. Like, this is a story about making your own fucking family. It's about figuring out life on your own terms. It's about being a weirdo and an outsider. There's just so many great themes in this. But it comes across as stories of a guy from Broadway. But there's a lot of living in this movie that just I found incredibly touching.
What was the coming out story?
He
said he wasn't in love until he was 60.
Yeah, and he all the way leading up to that is him. There's this real big thing in the queer community about having like your chosen family, and that's essentially what he had to do. But there was no word for it. There was no like community for it except for Broadway, and he was, you know, fortunate enough to be like scooped up right away and fostered in a way that he was able to like pass on all of his knowledge to, I assume, other kids who were in the same position. And just I've never seen Company, which is apparently one of his most experimental musicals, but mm-hmm. I think it's about like six couples and one single guy who is clearly gay, and just, you know, just by coincidence, all of the most watched clips on YouTube are sung by like that the fancy man from Law and Order SVU. Or what's his name? Doogie Howser.
Mm-hmm.
and those are just...
There's a version of... Yeah, the one on YouTube, the one with the Spanish subtitles.
Oh, I don't know if I saw that one. I've watched a lot.
But you watched the one with Doogie Howser.
Yes, yes.
Well, how about the vocal performance of Amy in that one wasn't... I didn't like as much as the lady from Alice, but her physical comedy performance is so freaking funny in that production, where she's like crawling around the, you really get the sense that she is like crazy, and she's crawling around on her knees and like, oh, it's so good.
Yeah, that's one this documentary made me want to seek out more of these musicals.
It's hard to find. Like, I want a legit copy of Company, and it's like, this is another one of those goddamn things where it's like you've got to get like an out of print DVD to have a legal copy of this. It's gross. So tell me more about your gay bones, Alex.
I forget the when they were recording the cast album, right? That's what they were doing. And you know that it was like expertly shot. I don't know who was.
I got a story on that.
Yeah, CBC
was going to Canadian Broadcasting folks were going mm-hmm. to start a whole big series of, you know, basically documenting stuff related to theater, and I think musicals in particular. And I think that may be the only one that got made. I've never seen it all the way through, but I've seen a ton of clips from it. But the songs in that one are really good. The songs in Company are terrific.
Just the someone to sit in your chair.
I would like to hear about
sleep.
Alex's bread balls and gay bone.
That's what it is. There's this one line that it's someone to sit in your chair and someone to ruin your sleep. That just I don't know. That's like
That's it.
Merlin, help.
I thought you were gonna tell the anecdote about going on the Loretta Young. He tells a story that even he says is probably apocryphal about Ethel Merman, where Ethel Merman. I thought this was your story. I'm sorry. Ethel Merman was going to go on the Loretta Young show. Loretta Young, famously very kind of like prim mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. proper. And he tells this joke so perfectly where Ethel, now I'm just repeating Stephen Sondheim's stolen joke, but Ethel Merman comes on. She says, God damn it. And Loretta Young says, well, when people come on my show and they curse, I ask them to, you know, put 25 cents in the can. And then it happens again. Finally. Ethel Merman says, here's $10. Go fuck yourself.
Oh, God. I love those stories. And then this has made me, too, like, this documentary is essentially a compilation of dozens and dozens of amazing YouTube videos that are, freely available. And I need to do another deep dive. I've never watched a documentary for 3 days straight, just for funsies. Like, it was, oh, God.
Those videos are so good. I keep compulsively linking to. Oh, by the way, I have also discovered the world of Stephen Sondheim animated GIFs, which are amazing. But the one that still really gets the Getting Married Today one is very good. But the one that still gets me is Send in the Clowns. That's like the stupidest song. It's like, it's so mawkish. It's so blah. But him on stage with that woman, like helping her understand what this song is about, how to sing it. The way he talks to the guy about Sweeney Todd and his blades. He's like, this is a love song. Make it sexy. You're singing to your razors because they're like a lover to you. And he has thought through, and he talks about this. You've got to think through, and I thought you would love this, Max. You have to think through every line and what it means. You have to be able to defend everything that you have written to a singer and explain to them how to do it. I love the way he thinks about this stuff. It is not masturbatory. It is all for a purpose. And I found it utterly inspiring.
Well, I think to like abstract a little bit from this of like stuff that I could find that would help me think about my own work or whatever is like, I think this is a guy who's like deeply embraced the constraints of his medium in a very productive way. So he understands the relationship of the cadence of words and the melody and the necessities of the plot and writing for the actress. And, you know, he talks a lot about constraints. Like constraints are, he talks about constraints as much as anything else in his creative process. And I think that, and he also has this metaphor of it being like a puzzle. And I do think when you're doing creative work there, I very much relate to the puzzle element of like, you, a lot of doing good creative work is like deeply understanding the constraints, the rules of what you have to do, the things you can't break, the promises you have to deliver on, and you lay them all out on the table before you like a puzzle, and then you find the best way to fit them together. And there isn't one, when you have a creative problem, there isn't, you know, you're trying to write a joke or a song or whatever, there's not one right solution. There's no, you know, there is the solution, which is the most elegant way you can come up with to put all the puzzle pieces together. And then when it's a really, you know, elegant solution and all the puzzle pieces are represented, the effect it has is that feeling that the audience, when they see it, they feel that they've eaten a meal. The heart and the intellect and the consideration, they do come through, and people can say, the effect is that they feel that they're seeing a work of genius, right? That like, I can't believe someone thought of all these pieces and fit them together. But I think behind the scenes, there is almost an element of, I don't know, of feeling like it's a trick or, I mean, some people feel like it's a trick or they're a fraud or, you know, the people do grapple with those feelings for the simple reason that like, they can see behind the curtain. They can see that all they're doing is, it's not that hard. Like anyone could do it.
Well, it's time for that monthly quote from your friend Pat. Don't compare your backstage to other people's onstage.
That's exactly it. Yep.
Probably my favorite thing that's ever, I love that program and I wish you guys would do it more. That line, I still think about it constantly.
I think that's so true. And like the truth of a lot of the creative process and a lot of work of, I don't know, of making games or comedy or whatever is like, it's a lot of understanding. You have to understand what puzzle pieces need to be in the puzzle, and then just find a way to fit them together, and there's your answer. And then at some point you stop because you're like, you can't keep futzing with the puzzle forever. At some point you're like, this has got to go, and then it's done.
He also talks about how you don't, sometimes the best song in the show ends up being one that was written when it was like just finishing up.
I was just about to say that. And like the effect of that is like when you're doing the puzzle, like you're often consumed by the work of just getting everything to fit together and like get it out by the deadline. And a lot of times it is remarkable how much everything just looks to you like you're just doing the work of solving this puzzle. And it is essentially arbitrary and capricious what people like and what people don't and what they respond to and what they don't. And sometimes you labor over a really difficult problem for a really long time and you come up with a really beautiful solution that the sort of I don't know what you call it. In philosophy, it's like the techne, the like, how do you say it? The like
practicum?
Yeah, the like practicum. It's like an elegant thing if you understand the practicum of what you're doing, because it's like, only I could have done this with the tools at my disposal. And you make this really beautiful thing and you put it out there and nobody gives a shit about it. And you're like, fuck. And then you remember, it's like, yeah, they don't see that part. They don't care about that. And then something, you shit out some little joke or some aside or something, and that becomes the, you know, some send in the clowns. And that, you know, you do it in a night and it's like, sometimes it's really easy for you and you're just like, I don't know, I didn't really labor over that at all. I just sort of like constructed a smart puzzle and solved it and put it out there, and that's the thing everyone seizes upon, and then you're a genius. It is essentially random. And I know a lot of, you know, people, game designers, whatever, who have like made their labor of love, worked for years on it, they finally put the thing out, and it's like, it's like, you know, other game designers can see the beauty of it and can see all the work that went into it, but it's just sort of like you know, it's like a wet fart, like, to the public, like they just never they just never get it.
I mean, that's essentially what Company was. Like, he got a chance to make his own puzzle, because he talks about how, you know, the like you said, he every line in every song needs to be defended because there's so many things going on in a musical, and more so now. Like everything is flash. There's crazy choreography. There's crazy choreography, and yet he puts those pieces together in a way that's like so flawless. And even when he's only doing lyrics, like what I didn't realize he only did the lyrics to West Side Story. Like that's crazy to me.
Yeah. He, I mean, they even have motion graphics about this, some really weird motion graphics in this, but clearly so the puzzle, bad. He talks about the puzzle. Oh, the pointillist thing at the end was kind of weird. I thought that got a little silly, but the other
why
thing
was
about,
it painted on like a burlap sack?
It had a lot of knobbiness, but the other thing, and I don't want to disrupt the master in his analogy, but like the truth is, and I think he actually gets close to this truth, a puzzle is a good way to describe how you take something that's disorganized and organize it. But the trouble is, like, with what he's doing, there's so much more to it than that. Like, you don't have a lid to know what it is that you're making. You kind of do. You don't even know if all the pieces are there. You don't know if you get to the end, there's one piece missing, and it turns out it's an entire separate set of jigsaw puzzles that you've got to fit together that just happen to be that size. Because guess what? You've also got Hal Prince. You got the budget for these things that you've got to deal with. You got the time constraints. And, like, to me, like, it takes a very strong character to be able to do that and not succeed at it every time, either financially or critically, to keep going. And like he says, it's a little bit of the Walt Disney thing where like he makes musicals to make be able to make more musicals. And I just find something very admirable about that. But also to the Big Max thing, just that whole idea of what was the quote? You can't learn it in a classroom. You got to just put it on and put it on and put it on. Because until you're there, you got to remember you're writing for a show. This is not something that's going to go in a museum. It's something that people are going to watch on stage in a certain context, on a certain night, with certain weather, with these lights and these costumes. And I there's nothing in this that I can take to, not much in this that I can apply directly to the bullshit that I do. But like thinking this carefully and closely about whatever it is you care about making, fucking A, man. Like you cannot go wrong with that kind of change to your thinking.
I wonder what task manager he uses these days.
Do you think he uses like maybe a Things or a Remember the Milk?
I don't know. Maybe to do.
I bet he thinks a lot about his
workflow.
That's
the frustrating thing about people who make musicals is nobody comes up to them and goes, "Oh, what brand of piano do you compose on?
what kind of stool do you have? I've been really struggling with this sonata, and I think it might be because of my stool."
I really want to get as good as writing musicals as you are, Mr. Sondheim. What kind of what brand of vodka are you drinking out of your goblet?